Hello and welcome to Igalia Chats. I'm Eric Meyer, a developer advocate at Igalia.
And I'm Brian Cardell, also a developer advocate at Igalia. And on today's show, we have a repeat guest, Dan Applequist, also Torgo online. We have Dan on. Dan wrote a piece recently. Do you want to introduce yourself, Dan, just for anybody who might not know who you are?
Sure. My name's Dan Applequist. My employment-wise, I work for Samsung Open Source Group, and I'm active in a whole bunch of different activities on the web and open source ecosystem. One of those that's probably most relevant to the conversation is that I am currently co-chair of the W3C Advisory Board, which is one of the three elected governance bodies within W3C, the World Wide Web Consortium. And I've also been involved in W3C for a long time, and I was previously co-chair of the Technical Architecture Group. And I think one of the other things that I want to enter into evidence in this discussion is the ethical web principles, which is something I helped to write. I'm active in those types of things. So that's we can get into a little bit more detail later if you want.
Yeah. So Dan wrote a blog post recently, pondering some things. And I have also been thinking about some of those things for reasons that we'll get into in a minute. But I don't know, Dan, do you want to talk about your post a little bit and sure. what you were mulling? And I think especially whether that is a purely philosophical question or whether there's a reason you're thinking about it.
Right, absolutely. And the post was called Yes, But It Is It the Web, right? Referencing I forget where it comes from, but a quote, yes, but is it art? It's a little bit intended to provoke discussion. It's not trying to answer any questions. In fact, it's maybe trying to ask more questions and trying to poke holes in some orthodoxy. Maybe that we have. So I've been working, as I mentioned in the post, I've been working on the web since the beginning of the web, right? I mean, I feel like I witnessed the birth of the web. I've been working on websites since the beginning of the whole thing. I've co-chaired the Technical Architecture Group in the W3C. You might think that I have an answer to this question, but when depending on who you talk to, different people have a different view about what is the web. And there is no strict definition of the web. And you can't go online and you can't go to, there's a Wikipedia page, I'm sure, for the web. But I would really challenge you to find like a real strict, succinct definition of what is the web. As I mentioned in the post, some people think that anything you can do in the browser is the web, and anything that happens outside the browser, such as in a native app, isn't the web. And we've spent a lot of mileage and a lot of time, adjudicating this apps versus web debate, which I find to be, I was there, right? I worked on the Firefox OS project in a support capacity. I helped in some way to start that debate, and I'm tired of it. As of 10 years ago, I tired of it, and I started to think about, wait a second, we really need to stop having this debate about apps versus web. But that's only one axis under which we can think about the question, what is the web, right? So like I mentioned, you can have very non-webby experiences in the browser, and likewise, sometimes in apps, you can be doing something that's very webby, right? Yeah. So some of my questions are if I'm using Mastodon, which is my primary social network these days. But I'm using it on a web, on a native app on my phone. Am I using the web? I think I am. Because this is a web technology. This is something that's of the web. It matches a lot of the characteristics. It's linkable. It's open. It's federated. It's porous. It doesn't lock you into any particular thing. It's often used to disseminate links to other websites. But it's not a, in that case, it's not a browser, but it can be accessed in a browser app. If I'm using an airline native application and I check in for my flight, suddenly I'm in a web view and I'm doing something that could be done on the web, but in this case, it's being executed inside a very web-like environment. Basically a web view within an application. That's one example, but like there are many, many examples of where web views come up within native applications. And, is that the web? What are some of the aspects that make things the web? Why does it matter, right? Like, we can talk about some of these things a little bit more, but like, why is this not just a philosophical question, like how many browsers can dance on the head of a pin? And the fact is, it does matter because we are often asking this question when it comes to deciding the priority of work that we do and whether or not something belongs in a certain place. Like, should we do this work in W3C or should we not do this work in W3C? And, the question comes up then, well, is it webby? Is it of the web? And if we are using very subjective terms to think about the web and everybody's got their own idea of what the web is, then sometimes it starts to become a situation where the web is anything that I care about, and anything that's not the web is what you care about, right? and I've seen that dynamic in play, right? Or when it comes to things like, oh, that breaks the web. Well, it only breaks the web if it's breaking something that I care about. And things. So we, it may be worthwhile to have a little bit more of an open conversation, a discussion about this topic so that we can reason more effectively, about what work we, about the work that we do when we do work on the web. And that's kind of what led me to the discussion.
Yeah. I used to say that the web was anything over HTTP that had like a URL,
right? It's a fair definition. Yeah.
Yeah. But I'm not sure that I'm even that restrictive anymore. Right. Because like you were talking about in a web view of right. In an app, you're doing a thing that could be on a publicly addressable URL, but maybe it's not.
The other really good example that I've been using a lot recently is the NHS app. We have a National Health Service in the UK. NHS has their app. It's basically a web view in a wrapped in a native application that gives you biometric login, but then everything you're doing in that app is in a web view, and it's also something that you could be doing on the web in a web browser. If you know the URL to it, then you can, I can go online and I can do all the things I can do in the native app, but the native app gives me, the biometric login, the notifications and a few other bells and whistles. Right. So definitely that is the web, right?
Heretic.
Oh, wait. And well, I think it also matters. Another reason it matters, I think, is because quite often when we're talking about the web, we're talking about the benefits of the web to the end user, right? Like, is it private? Does it, is it secure? Is it internationalized? Does it have accessibility? Those are all features that we come to expect from the web. And if we're suddenly saying, well, those things aren't the web actually, then they don't need to have, they don't need to benefit from all of those things. It's okay if your check-in experience isn't accessible. It's okay if your NHS app isn't internationalized. I want my NHS data to be, subject to the same privacy restrictions. I want everything that goes on in there to be subject to the same privacy regime or security regime as anything else.
So you're hitting on like a distinction that I think I would like to try to make as a like hypothetical, but before we get there, I just wanted to say that many episodes ago now, we did a show or maybe even two that were talking about XSLT and the effort that a lot of people saw as being driven by Google, but it wasn't, to remove XSLT from browsers. So there was a request to obsolete XSLT and remove it from W3C's catalog and say, like, we don't recommend you use it. Mm-hmm. And part of this debate came up because, there's a question about like, well, hey, if it's not in the browsers, then is it the web? Right.
Right.
And like, why would we be recommending it? And why would you do that work in a place called the World Wide Web Consortium? And I mean, I think these are good questions because the W3C has a huge, huge catalog of a wide gamut of things that it covers.
There are 317 standards that have reached rec.
And only like 23% of them are something that's implemented in browsers. Mm-hmm. Over 75% of them are not that. And many don't even particularly care that they're not, they're not trying to be implemented by web browsers, like the social web protocols, for example.
Yeah,
I don't think have aspirations to be implemented by the browser directly.
Exactly.
So there are ones that cover data formats, like XML. There are 15 different working groups that have been closed at W3C over time that start with the letter X. Which is great,
but there are more recent good examples of data formats. I mean, WebVTT is another example, right? Where it's something that is a format that is currently being updated, which has to do with accessible captions that go alongside of video or media, is that important for the web? Yeah, absolutely. Is it something that needs to run in the browser? Maybe, I don't know. But it might not be seen as like a core browser technology.
Yeah.
I mean, there are certain things like that that are
there. And there are other like even updated work on some of those older things, like JSON-LD newer semantic web idea that some people actually use. And,
it's used in a lot of places. It's used extensively in, ActivityPub uses it, for instance, which we've just been talking about. Right. So,
right. It's a way to annotate data. It's data about data and it's not used by the browser. Maybe browser might find uses for it. Maybe it won't, but it's okay. It's still clearly part of the web or it could be part of the web, right?
Yeah.
So I was thinking, it came out of that. Somebody requested that maybe the tag could help define some of these differences in a way that is not combative, but is helpful, right? So not to say like those things aren't the web, but a way to get a little bit more specific with the terms. And one of the things that I like about having you on here is that you also were in the tag when I believe we really began framing things in a kind of a not specifically extensible web, but like the idea of the extensible web, that sort of the inside the browser is a platform, and like many platforms, you can draw a kind of a diagram of the strata of it. And it would be great if we could explain that strata. Anyway, I think we started using the word web platform a lot, and it was suggested in the issue that maybe the web platform, even though it has this big sounding word, is actually more narrow than the web. Maybe the web platform is sort of the colloquial word that we've come up with to describe the stuff that is in at least browser engines. You know, maybe yeah. Browsers even is too narrow, but it's that specific thing that implies, you know, again, we say web APIs, but maybe what we really mean is like the web platform APIs, or you know, the web browser engine APIs. And we talk about things in terms of the web security model, but well, it really is sort of like the web platform or the web browser security model, because the security model that you would have on a server, you know, for doing internal work or processing for publishing might be actually pretty different. So I don't know, what do you think about that?
A number of things come to mind. First of all, so I mentioned the ethical web principles. That's something that I helped to write, which is not trying to define the web, but it is trying to draw a boundary around the types of things that we work on in W3C. It's trying to say, like, you know, when we work on something, we will make sure that it does not cause harm to society, for instance, or that more concretely, it's transparent. It can be inspected easily, that it's multi-browser, multi-OS, multi-device, it can be consumed in the way people choose. Those are different, you know, ways that we can think about the web. We also can go back to the priority of constituencies, right? That the end user is more important, that things should be built according to user needs, and then after that the needs of the web developer, and after that the needs of the browser developer, and after that, you know, the way back the least priority is theoretical purity. I think it's also worth noting that there's a W3C tag finding that is winning its way through the process called the web user agent finding, which is about what is a web user agent, right? So that's another way that we can classify things is, what is a user agent? Well, there are, a browser is a user agent, but the browser isn't the only kind of user agent, right? Because you can also, the curl is also a user agent,
yeah.
Right? And and a lot of the thinking that started off the discussion about we should have a user agent finding is that in some ways, autonomous agents or LLM agents are starting to become user agents because they're driving web usage, or they, you know, you might have an agent like in the sense of the AI agent that actually goes out and uses the web on your behalf, right? So we need to think about that as well. And I think the stuff that's in that document is good in terms of how do we reason about what a user agent is? What are the, what are the duties of a user agent, like the duty of protection, and the duty of honesty? And these sound like fluffy words, but it's very well written, actually, this stuff. And it makes it clear that the whole point of a user agent is to act on the user's behalf on the web. I do, coming back to your thing I about web platform, I do think that web platform is more narrow than the web. The web is always going to be an extremely amorphous thing, and maybe that's good, right? I think that if we can button down or nail down or better define things like web platform or user agent, then that helps us to reason about things. I think one of the other things that we haven't talked about is baseline. So that's something, you know, that the WebDX community group is working on, this baseline thing. I'm starting to hear this talked about at conferences where I go to, and people talk about, hey, there's this new API. By the way, it's in baseline, so you can expect to be able to use it. That's important. You know, when you think about web users, or sorry, web developers, people who are actually building websites, either, you know, commercially or elsewise, they care about what's in baseline. So to some degree, that also has to play a role here. Like, what, you know, again, but again, coming back to web platform, what the web term web platform has also been divisive, because some people seem to really not like it. And I'm not sure. I kind of like the idea of talking about the web platform and having that, you know, be a kind of more narrow subset of what we're talking about when we talk about the web. But somehow it rubs some people the wrong way. Somehow, I think, yeah.
I don't want to put him on the spot, but actually, I think it was during the first or the second Extensible Web Summit, the one we did in the O'Reilly conference. Do you remember? Eric was a keynoter there, and he said that the web isn't a platform.
Okay.
So
that was what, 11 years ago?
Something like that. Yeah.
Defend your statement.
It was a good, no, it was a good talk, actually. Yeah, go ahead, Eric.
Well, from what I remember of that talk, which, as you say, was like 11 years ago, I mean, one of the points I made was that this was the beginning of React and, React-like frameworks.
Right.
And so I do remember one example. Yeah, it was sort of a news/social site, as I recall. Anyway, this was a site that if JavaScript failed, there was nothing rendered. Like, there was no content. And I said on stage, this is not of the web. Like, if it absolutely requires 100% JavaScript in order to render anything, it is not a thing of the web. It is an application that is served across the web. Right. And I was trying to, this was at, was it Fluent? Was that the name of the conference?
Yeah.
It was an O'Reilly conference. It was one of the big O'Reilly conferences. It was very JavaScript heavy. So, I mean, and in part, I had been asked to come and present an alternate view. So yeah. I was being a little bit provocative, but I think I'm still kind of sincere in that. In that, if you make something that requires a very narrow set of technologies and things, everything to work exactly correctly in order to get any content, if it's otherwise literally inaccessible, not in the screen readers can't read it way, but in the nobody can access it if they don't meet all of these criteria very exactly, then it's not of the web. It's just something that's served over the web.
But if you host a MP4 on the web, like, right, it doesn't render in your browser, it downloads, but it's still of the web. I also want to note really quickly, that's actually when I met Eric for the first time in real life. Like, we had known each other in you know, online and stuff.
Yeah. But,
yeah.
And you know, like I say, I was being a little bit provocative.
Yeah.
In especially because, like, I literally had people come up to me after the talk, as I had expected, and say, you're wrong. Or there was one guy who said something like, let's make a bet and let's see where we are in 10 years, if I'm right or you're right.
I see.
I think the bet he was offering was, in 10 years, the web will be like, if you don't have JavaScript, you know, basically it would be like an all flash web, except it would be an all JavaScript web.
And I don't think that's the case.
Which is why I say, I think I would argue that I am closer to having won that bet than he was. But if you were to interpret the flip side of that as JavaScript will not be used to serve any content, then I also lost the bet.
I think that this is part of the interesting question, because certainly there is a very common understanding of the web in which I would totally agree with what Eric is saying, right? I do think that those are things that the web should do for the normal experience of, or HTML over HTTP in your web browser. You know, I totally agree. And I agree with what he was saying in that, like, it's a continuum, and that you'll have a continuum of clients. And I think over the years, like, we have done things like baseline, which is to try to tell you what that continuum reasonably looks like. Do you need to be writing for IE3? You know, like, no, that's not reasonable. You know, it's not reasonable that you should write your thing for IE3, probably. I think it's also, when we talk about this web platform and this sort of, like, you know, stack of technologies, there are, the stuff in the web browser is also separable. You know, like, the web engine itself is separable. Like you say, you can make a web view, and it's not the same as being in the browser. It's a little bit different. You can add things. You can add native protocol handlers. You can add, like, where you can read from the file system. You know, you can add stuff for reading your fingerprint, your biometrics, you know.
Electron apps are a good example of that.
Electron, like, that's what I'm saying. You can separate JavaScript engines and have things like Bun or Node.js. I think I used this analogy the other day when I was talking to Eric, and I kind of like it. A JavaScript engine is part of the web platform in the same way that a car's tires are part of a car. They're not a car. They're tires, you know. General principles or regulations that you might talk about with cars don't apply to a tire swing, right? Like, and that's where it gets tricky, because when we go through security review, privacy review, all these things, it helps to know what are you trying to do, you know? Like, so XSLT, like, some of the things had issues if you're using them in the browser, right? And part of that is just because we didn't have the same rigors when we were making them in the first place. We didn't have some of the understanding, some of the rules that we do now. But, like, if you're making a data format, like, say, JSON-LD, and you're like, this is going through, you know, reviews, how you review that is a little bit potentially different, depending on whether you think it's going to be implemented in the browser or it's just a data format, you know? Yeah.
We haven't even talked about identity, but identity is another thing that W3C is doing a lot of work on, verifiable credentials. And some of that stuff touches the browser, like you have the digital credentials API. Some of it is intended as just raw data formats and that enable credentials to be moved around.
Payments is another one, right?
Yeah, payments.
And then we had, like, the automotive groups who are using more like a web view. We have the mini app stuff that's trying to do.
Those are both worth talking about in more detail, actually. You know, I remember that Hadley and I, and Hadley is currently one of the co-chairs of the TAG, and we were both in the TAG at the time, I remember us walking into a web automotive meeting in one of the TPAC, this was years ago, and, you know, asking some questions like, okay, so now can I write my own dashboard you know, using HTML and install it into my own car. Oh, no, 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 you can't do that. You know, can, well, can, you know, can I, is this going to be, you know, subject to the same security rules as the, you know, as something that runs in another web environment as in the browser. And, you know, all these, so it came to our view at the time, and I don't mean to put words in Hadley's mouth, but I think this was our shared view, was that this didn't seem like it was very webby, what was going on in the Web Automotive Group. It was basically like using HTML and JavaScript to write a effectively, you know, packaged and somewhat proprietary way to do infotainment systems in cars. And what, you know, so that left us scratching our heads. Now, on the other hand, more recently, we've been looking at mini apps. Mini apps are widely used across China in particular, and by, you know, by billions of people. I had the opportunity to, you know, visit China recently, and I was using mini apps. I have to say, I was, you know, I was running my Alipay application, which is the main application, and then these mini apps kind of pop up within Alipay or within, you know, whatever a super app you, that you're running. Again, this came to my mind as I was thinking about how do we define the web. If we exclude mini apps, then to a certain extent, we're excluding them from the benefits that the web brings, right? Mm-hmm. So one of the things that the tag has pushed on a number of occasions to the mini app community is please use the mechanisms of that we already have in the web. Use the manifest file instead of building your own manifest. Make sure that mini apps implement the web security model instead of having a different security model. And I think all of that, if we can get over those humps, and some of those things are, you know, are happening, right? That community has been receptive to those comments, then does it matter that I cannot bring up my mini app, super app, and enter in a URL? But in fact, I'm only allowed to go to the curated set of mini apps that my super app provider has chosen for me. I mean, it's not the world that I want to live in. I prefer the open world, but I can also see the benefits of such a world being implemented using web technologies and therefore benefiting from, you know, the good things that we put into the web, if you see what I mean.
Totally. Yeah. The last year at TPAC, and the conversation has continued a lot. I'm hoping that by the next TPAC, we actually get to the thing that we talked about last TPAC, which is there was a joint session that was the WebViews community group.
Right.
And the mini apps working group, and yeah, people from isolated web apps, which is another community group,
yeah,
and people who are interested in, you know, Electron, and you know, you work for Samsung. Samsung has some TVs, I believe.
The whole we haven't even talked about TVs, but that's a whole nother mess. But yeah.
Anyway, yeah, I mean, no, but TVs, like, yeah. I say this all the time, like, you know, you, like, depending on where you are in the world, like, you, it's almost impossible for you to get away from the web, right? Like, yeah. I mean, the web is everything.
If you're watching Netflix, you're using HTML and JavaScript, all that stuff is built in. Exactly. I mean, part of the challenge there, just to divert for one second, is that those environments they have a lot of proprietary APIs. They're not built to some degree using the same security model, and they don't update nearly as often, right? So if you have like a you know, your phone, right? And you've got your browser on your phone, that updates very often because that's how browsers have come to update, because they need to do that in order to introduce new features and introduce security fixes and stuff like that. The web runtime environments that are baked into TVs update much more slowly. And you'll see, if you look into it, you'll see that you're running a version of Chromium there that's much, much older. Mm-hmm.
Also maybe it doesn't matter as much in a lot of ways. There are lots of places where
in the environment, but yeah.
There are lots of places where you use the web that you're not even realizing, a point of sale system in a store, when you're at the gas station, those interfaces, driving down the street, digital signage, all of the infotainment systems, like wherever you are, even like lots and lots of smart appliances and, thermostats. And we worked with people who make like speakers that have like, a web interface in them. Like medical devices and things use it. I think it was on one of the NASA things, right, Eric? We have like JavaScript in space.
Yeah, the James Webb Space Telescope runs on a 20-year-old version of JavaScript.
Yeah. So
you didn't know that.
Yeah. it's a very specific like version of JavaScript, but it's like a 2005 era JavaScript that I think was not forked exactly, but it was adapted in some minor way for use in things like space probes. Daniel Stenberg talks about how curl is running on Mars.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Curl is everywhere, right? Yes,
and so is JavaScript, and you could argue therefore the web. Although, to go back to my 2015 talk, maybe just JavaScript isn't enough, or maybe it is. Actually, I dug up the slides. The title of the talk was "This Web App Best Viewed by Somebody Else." So,
but all those things use web technologies.
Yeah.
Like that's inarguable, right? And they all benefit from them. There's a societal benefit in a lot of ways. Like they're the infrastructure of the modern world. That's nothing to sneeze at. Like we're happy about that. But is it the web?
Yeah, I mean,
yes. Is it the web platform?
Right.
Kind of. Like I feel like we do need some more words here. So in that TPAC session last year, there was discussion that the mini app working group was their charter was set to expire, and they had some successes, some frustrations. They were looking at where to go next, and we thought like all of these groups are trying to do something really, really similar. I don't know, we call it like the embedded web or something like that, and like maybe we can, rather than everybody swim in vaguely similar directions but not to the same place, we can all get in the same boat and paddle to the same place, and more likely actually arrive. So I don't know, I'm hoping that we can work together to figure that out, and probably it means some distinctions and new terminology, because you're right in a lot of ways that I don't know how much of a problem it is that like my digital signage can't use has as a CSS selector if it doesn't use has, you know what I mean? Like it doesn't matter. Are there critical security updates? That's a different story, but most of them nowadays, like more recently they do send security patches at least. I know we maintain WPE, the WebKit port for embedded engines. And, we work with lots of companies to do those. We release security patches pretty regularly. So,
well, the other thing that I'm covering right now is a lot of work having to do with the CRA, the Cyber Resilience Act in Europe, right? Which is, which we've been talking a lot about. How does this impact web developers? And again, it also touches on the question of what is the web, right? Like,
and what is a user agent?
And what is a website, versus what is a web application. So the it turns out the regulation has a specific carve out for websites, where websites aren't really covered under the CRA. So therefore they don't, as a web developer, as a quote unquote normal web developer, you don't have to worry about CRA obligations with regards to software supply chain security and stuff like that. But if your web application happens to be in a native application, you're writing the web app that allows somebody to check in for their flight, or you're writing the NHS web app that I was talking about before that's packaged up in a native application, or if you're writing a web app that plays a part in another product with a digital element, and my example that I have trotted out at a couple of talks is I have a home thermostat system called Hive, which is a UK-based company that does home automation. And they have an app that allows me to control my home heating and my my valves on my radiators. But I can also log in to that system using a web app. So in that case, that is there's a risk there. There's an inherent, you could actually if somebody exploited a flaw in that application, they might be able to do damage to my house. Yeah. These are the real world consequences are happening, and because of security issues coming back to the point about it, is it the web? The question of whether or not somebody needs to pay attention to some regulation is based on the answer to that question. Am I building something for the web or not?
Yeah.
It would be good to have some better guidance out there. I don't know. I really like the idea of the folks from the WebView group, from the mini app group, and from the isolated web app group communities coming together and having a bit of a discussion and moving forward. That's called standardization. That's ideally what it is, that what the value of something like W3C brings is to bring those conversations together. Often that happens in like a workshop where you bring disparate voices together, and then it turns out that, hey, we agree on like 70% of this. So then you end up with something that satisfies many of the concerns, and some people have to climb down from some of their positions, but basically you end up with a good thing that satisfies many people, and you've taken advantage of good economy there of having multiple implementations that implement all the same thing. So yes, that would be a really good thing. It's been difficult to get those people to talk to each other in my
yeah, it's totally.
But
totally,
sometimes yeah. They say that the definition of insanity is something doesn't work again and again, and so you try it one more time. But in my experience, sometimes that is what you need to do. You need to keep asking, and you need to keep prompting, and you need to keep prodding, and eventually people do start talking to each other. And sometimes you need to ask multiple times,
Yeah, it can take years, right?
Yeah, doing the same thing over and over, expecting a different result, may be the definition of insanity, but it's also the definition of practice.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly. And persistence.
Yeah.
So, exactly. Yeah. So sometimes you need that. And the web platform is nothing if not persistent, right?
Yeah.
It's been much more persistent and much more resilient than I initially gave it credit for being possible or being capable of. There are at least two distinct times in the last 30 years where I was sure that the web had only a few years left to live, because technology blah, different technologies each time, we're just completely going to replace the web because, right, for whatever reasons, and I'm not going to go into those, but I've come to appreciate a quote that I saw somewhere. I cannot find it, but someone said something like, there are, it's very hard to figure out what the right winning bets are in technology, but the one sure losing bet in technology is to bet against the web. And they said this like 15, 20 years ago. And I wish I could track it down so I could
get
proper attribution.
And I echo that. I absolutely echo that. There have been so many, and I'm going back to the 90s here, so many examples of people coming out with a new technology and saying, this kills the web, right? Because many people want to, you know, they are threatened by the web and its lack of a single control point, right? So people, you know, I remember people wanted to replace the URL with something else that would be so much easier for people to understand. Of course, with one single control point where you have to register them with one, you have to register these things with one place, right? You know, and like that the example of technologies. So again, that comes back to the definition of the web, right? We know we can look at something like that and we can say, okay, well, that is not the web, clearly, right?
Supreme Court definition of the web.
It's definitely it's worth having these discussions so that we can make sure that as the web continues to evolve, that it evolves along a positive and beneficial in a beneficial track, you know.
Yeah
I would also say that probably some of the people who came out with this will kill the web maybe did so not, some did it not because they were threatened by the web so much as they wanted something very different. They wanted a different environment than the web.
Yeah.
Like provides for development. I mean, you know, Douglas Crockford has a famous comment about the web as the most hostile in software engineering environment known to man.
Certainly was very true when he said it.
Well, but you know, if you come from, like, we know people, all of us know people who vastly prefer the back end, mm-hmm. right? Because it's a very structured and predictable and sort of instant feedback on errors environment.
Right.
As opposed to the web, which is designed intentionally to be very resilient, very fault tolerant, and does not like instantly throw an error to say, well, here's where you messed up your CSS. It just ignores the bit of CSS that it doesn't understand. That is very hostile if you're used to, well, if I make a mistake, the compiler will catch it, right? And so, you know, my take on what he said is that it's the most hostile environment to developer assumptions known to man, right? And if you make certain assumptions, you are likely to end up hoist on your own trap, basically. No, not even meaning to. So, you know, there have been people who have proposed replacements for CSS, right? Because CSS is too whatever it is that they don't like about it, it's too much that. It's too, yeah. There have been proposals to replace HTML because it's, you know, it should throw error. I mean, that very strict error handling. And if you got your markup wrong, it would literally just throw an error message instead of trying to render the page. That didn't really go anywhere. And those of us who sort of grew up or developed in the web environment came up in that. And so we absorbed those principles of ubiquity over consistency.
Right.
And, you know, ideally accessibility over sort of gatekeeping and resilience and fault tolerance over, you know, very sort of fragile, strict things. I think one of the reasons that they're defended so fiercely is that they are very human. They're not mechanical, right? A mechanical environment is one where it throws an error the instant it detects a problem and doesn't try to go any further. A human environment is one where, okay, well, there was a mistake here. We're just going to skip past that and do the best that we can with the rest.
Right. Because it's in the benefit, because it benefits the end user, right?
Yeah.
The worst thing is that the user gets an abstract error message that, and then can't yeah. check their bank balance or register their car, right? or the types of things that people use the web for, which are like, you know, it's so important to them.
Everything. I mean, to get their medicine, right? Yes. There's a lot of like really catastrophic people can't get access to, you know, critical services and stuff like that.
Right. But really there's another, and I know that we're getting low on time, but I mean, there's another axis of the web versus not the web, right? Or which is more of like a business thing, right? Like, so in the mid 90s, I worked for AOL, and that was at a time when people at AOL viewed their model as being the future of digital services that would be brought to the end user. And their model is very much, if you want to have your newspaper or your service or your pizza delivery shop on AOL, then you do a deal with AOL, and that therefore AOL brings it to you. It's much, much more like a cable TV model. And the dynamic that we've seen since then is very much like this thing where companies grow up on the web, and then they sort of forget what helped them grow and what made them successful in the first place, and they start to turn inward and exhibit some of those same properties of trying to control everything and trying to be the single conduit. And luckily, the web is, I would say, and this is one important aspect of the web. The web is resistant. The web has a healthy immune system that is able to resist that kind of centralization, and allows alternatives to be developed. Right? One social network becomes too powerful. Well, people can develop their own open source alternatives. Right? And right now we have two examples of that, actually, in terms of two different ecosystems. So
you could argue that the web interprets insularity as damage and routes around it.
It does. Yeah. I think. And that's not always. It doesn't do it by itself. It requires people, because it's of people. Web is for people. It's a people-based system.
this is for everyone.
Yes, right, yes.
Projected onto the, was it the 2012
Olympics? We all need to pay attention to this and help this, and, you know, it requires constant support, but it's worth supporting.
You know, going back to your kind of like business thing, it's a little bit different aspect of that point, but, you know, when you do break these things down into their component parts, more and more people are interested in the component parts because you don't have to buy into the whole thing. And so, you know, when you take it that way and you look at like V8, how many people are interested in V8 in the browser, it's a really huge number. But then, you know, how many people are interested in it because of Node? How many people are interested in a Node right. because of the ability to make packages with Electron, you know? The nice thing about that is that all of those people are not just interested in their little bit. They inevitably find reasons to commit upstream. And so, you know, I think we're helping build the open source commons by increasing the number of people who are interested in different parts of it. Having some definition that helps everybody be included in that is actually really important for the long-term sustainability of the web, you know, I have said a number of times that like someday Google won't be Google, you know, like Google is not the company that it was 15 years ago, but it's still Google. And, you know, someday somebody, I don't know, gonna knock them off their pedestal and, you know, they will go the way of, you know, Wang computers, you know, of
Alta Vista.
Yeah, of Alta Vista or, you know, like AOL, you know, I mean, these were giant industry leaders.
There are many of those. Yeah. I mean, one of the things that comes to mind, coming back to the thing about what is the web, right? And Is it possible, and you talked about the web being a continuum, Brian, and I think that's true.
I was quoting Eric, actually.
Oh, all right, okay.
Yeah.
Do we need a webbiness quotient? Right? Like a set of tests that we could apply to any given thing and say, is it web? Is it the web or not? Well, we're not going to give you a yes or no answer, but we'll give you like a, it's, yeah, it's 70% fresh web. No, this is 30%. So we're really thinking it's more, I don't know, you know, I'm thinking of like the Rotten Tomatoes score,
right.
You know, like,
right. Is it? Right. Yeah, I like it.
That might be more apt.
We can make an app for that.
It's true.
Okay. Thanks, Dan. I don't know if the tag will ultimately, you know, produce a finding on this like we were asked to. I certainly think it's worth like continuing to talk about and think about. And yeah, hopefully if we do, you'll weigh in on that.
I will definitely weigh in.
Thanks again, Dan.
Yeah, thanks for coming.